Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we explore ideas and strategies and blueprints. I tell stories of things that worked, but also those big epic fails. I interview experts, all because I truly believe the teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And I've been thinking about this idea of creativity all week long. And in particular, this idea of what it means to be creative in a world of AI. Because for the first time ever, AI truly feels like it is becoming creative. And I mention that because I've explored two different tools this week that had me going, whoa, this is more than I thought. And one is the ChatGPT, and the other one is an AI image generator that does an amazing job essentially making images that are mashups of different ideas. And it has me questioning, you know, what does it mean for students to be creative in this new world of AI? And I think we're kind of collectively having a moment right now where we're all beginning to say, what does this look like? What does this mean? How are things changing? In other words, I really think that for the first time ever, AI has truly arrived, and we're at the very cusp of an artificial intelligence revolution. So I'm going to explore that today. And I'm going to start by sharing a story. About 3 years ago, I stood in a high-tech lab at a technical university, and I was staring at this giant flat screen TV. And the professor in front of me asked me a question. He said, can you tell me which of these samples was generated via artificial intelligence? Now, at the top, a student had asked a complex question related to an application of calculus for calculating fluid flow and heat transfer. It was the kind of math that I honestly did not understand, and I'll admit that I just didn't get it. Below, a graduate student and an AI chatbot had both answered the question. So I studied both answers, and I looked at them, and I looked at them, and finally I shook my head. I couldn't tell the difference. Both options were clear and concise, with just a touch of colloquial friendliness while still remaining kind of cold and objective. Are they both AI? I asked. It's easy to think that. The grad student is an engineer, and we tend to be a little robotic, the professor answered. But no, the correct answer was B. I stood there in the lab, baffled by the progression of machine learning. This wasn't merely close enough. This was it. Artificial intelligence had arrived, and I felt unnerved. He then continued, the students can't tell the difference either. To them, it's just a chat with an expert. My head swirled with questions of the Turing test. I started thinking about deepfakes and the future of humanity. I'm pretty sure an image or two from Blade Runner popped in there as well. But more than anything else, I had a nagging question. Will AI replace me? After all, assessment tends to be a significant aspect of what I do as an educator. But this bot could provide feedback in seconds. And it was good, really good feedback. Now later, after completing a workshop on student voice and choice with the professors at that university, I started wondering if AI would replace assessment entirely. Or maybe it wouldn't. Maybe it would merely amplify it. Maybe I could spend less time writing out feedback and more time doing in-depth one-on-one conferences with that human dynamic element that you only get from face-to-face interactions. Or maybe my role as a professor would change entirely. Perhaps I would vet the AI feedback to make sure it's on target and not biased. Or maybe I would shift toward being more of a course architect and designer, the university could save a lot of money by having cheaper college experiences with fewer humans and more AI. The truth is, I can't predict how AI and machine learning will change education. None of us can. Decades ago, Neil Postman reminded us about the idea that we can rarely predict what will happen with education, with technology. It's important to think critically about it, but we can rarely predict its impact on society. Nobody knew the printing press would lead to the rise of the nation state. Nobody knew that the Industrial Revolution would spark climate change. In my own lifetime, I saw the bold predictions of stranger danger in social media. And that turned out to be, well, not as big a deal as we thought. We all got pretty comfortable just sharing pictures online and sharing our thoughts online. But nobody could have predicted the role of filter bubbles and echo chambers and the algorithms and what that would do in terms of democracy around the world. We often overreact to certain elements of a new technology and fail to understand the larger social implications in other domains. Right now, I've seen bold predictions about everything from the death of journalism to why we no longer need English language arts classes to why we won't have software engineers in the future. And yet, I'm not so sure about any of this. None of us are. All of these fields will change, but often in ways that surprise us. The AI revolution is here. Right now, we're having this cultural moment where we are recognizing the power of artificial intelligence. It's been a slow build. Autocorrect here, Grammarly suggestion there, an autofill option in Gmail and Google searches, a small chat at the bottom left-hand corner of the screen with an AI who helps you get a refund on the flight that you accidentally purchased from Expedia. But it always felt small and kind of off in the margins. But then ChatGPT came along, and suddenly we're left asking, what does this mean for the future of work? What does this mean for teaching and learning? I could play around with it for hours. And in fact, I did play around with it for hours this week. I started with a typical critical thinking writing prompt I used to ask as a warm-up in my social studies class back when I taught middle school. Could the AI actually compare and contrast 19th century imperialism to 21st century globalization? Absolutely. The answer that I got from them was solid. And then I added a parameter. I wrote down, explain it to someone who is 14. And their answer, which you can read on the blog post that goes with this, honestly, it looked like something that you would see from a high-achieving eighth grader. Now, what would this look like if I asked this question for a warm-up? Would students simply plug it into the ChatGPT and everyone generally gets the same answer? I couldn't answer that question. I'm also an avid illustrator, so I decided to play around with the AI options in creating pictures. I'd seen a little bit of this on Instagram. I knew what was happening, but I wanted to know, like, how good would it do at turning a picture of me into me being a Viking? And if I ask them, the AI, to create a picture of me as a Viking, would I be a football player or would I go historical? Well, the result was something historical. And I gotta be honest, looking at it, it looks like me. Now, it's a little bit too flattering. If you go to the website that corresponds to this podcast episode, you can look at the picture. It's very flattering, actually. I look at it and I go, it looks like me, just with no forehead wrinkles, the bags under my eyes aren't there, that zit that I have on my nose right now isn't there. It's a very flattering, albeit Viking, picture of me. And again, I started wondering about what this means for the future. In the past, I've always felt like creativity, and honestly, visual creativity in particular, was a distinctly human endeavor. But I have to admit that AI did a pretty good job with the portrait. Now, I've been following artificial intelligence for a few years now. I've seen how it's wreaking havoc in math classes where students use PhotoMath for homework. I've paid attention to some of the applications in engineering. But this week, I kept thinking, what does this mean for the future of education? And more importantly, how do we respond to it? In general, I think there are two different approaches. There's futurism and then just block it. So route number one is futurism, the golden promise of futurism. And I'm going to share a quick story about this. When I was in middle school, one of my teachers called the entire class to the front of the room. He held up this shiny golden disc in wild excitement. "This will change learning forever," he said, his eyes gleaming. "Someday you'll be able to pick up one of these discs and learn exactly what you need to learn. No more taking notes from the teacher. You won't have to learn from someone like me." It felt uneasy about learning from a golden disc instead of a human. I didn't want this to replace a teacher. I liked my teacher. I liked how he would change his explanations in the moment, on the spot, just by reading our body language. I liked the way he made us laugh. I enjoyed the inefficient way he got off topic and we randomly learned things that weren't in the textbook but turned out to be fascinating. Why would I want to replace this with a golden disc? "This is the future of education, kids," he said with a grin. "This will change things forever." But it did not change education forever. I haven't seen a laser disc in 3 decades, and or maybe 2 decades. I don't know how long it's been. But I'm pretty confident that my own kids will never use a golden disc either. Their teachers won't be replaced by laser discs. Not now, not ever. And yet, this is the same sentiment I've seen in many different iterations. I've watched as one-to-one devices and laptops and adaptive learning programs all promised to replace teachers. And now here we are in this big cultural moment, and it's the promise of AI. But again, I don't buy it. Teaching will always be deeply relational, filled with mistakes and missteps and false starts, and that is the beauty of it. I shared that idea recently with this notion of teaching in beta. Teachers will always be the heart of innovation. The second route is this: just block it. I'm going to share another story, this time from when I was teaching middle school. "Mr. Spencer, I can't talk to my group members," a boy said. "What do you mean?" I asked. "Look, the chat's gone," Carlos said, pointing to the computer. "Gone, gone?" I asked. "Mine too," another student chimed in. "Yeah, it's not showing for me either." I was then met with a chorus of "mine won't work as well." "No worries, just send an email," I instructed. This time, everyone's emails were rejected. "I got it to work on my phone," another student said. "I just had to use my personal Gmail. Try that." Now that afternoon, I met with tech support, and I learned that they had disabled chat and limited emails back and forth due to bullying that had occurred in another classroom. Now this is an example of the second route of just block the tech. My students were working on a global collaboration project, and suddenly they couldn't engage in the project. And I've seen this second approach all the time. Schools block YouTube, online gaming, social media. And the process here is basically, instead of futurism, it focuses on surveillance, accountability measures, and just blocking all new tech. In terms of ChatGPT, I've already seen English teachers saying things like, "I'll just make students handwrite all their essays in class." But as Mary Beth Hertz brought up on Twitter, this has a very ableist bent. Some students simply need to type their work. Now, I would argue there is a third option that I'm going to get into in a second. But I want to point out right here, there are two different dangers. The danger of futurism is that it fixates on novelty rather than sustainability. It also ignores the shadow side of technology and the harmful disruptions that happen in our society because of the technology that we use. The danger of the lock and block approach is that it ignores the external context, and it can lead to a place of irrelevance and heavy-handed surveillance. So where does that lead us? Well, there's a third option. This last February, I read a book called Human Work in an Age of Smart Machines, and it is a phenomenal read. I would highly recommend it. But in this groundbreaking work, the author argues that we should begin with the question, what is it that we as humans can do that the machines can't do? It might mean developing empathy, thinking divergently, exploring your curiosity, or finding your own unique lens to solve problems. Here's the good news. This right here, that's what schools have been doing for a long time. For the last 5 years or so, I've seen a lot of schools and districts that are developing graduate profiles. And the graduate profile is basically the idea of what is it that students need in the future. They're looking at the human skills that students will need in an age of AI and machine learning. But it simply can't remain as a document that schools have on the website or a poster that they put up on the wall. If we're going to develop these deeply human skills, we need to rethink the type of learning that students engage in. We need to de-emphasize and perhaps even scrap standardized testing and get rid of those heavy-handed accountability measures that are driving teachers out of education. I explored this idea in depth in my book, Vintage Innovation. You can check out the book. You can also check out the toolkit that goes with it. And I started out with an idea that AJ Juliana and I had shared in our book, Empowered, and it's the notion that the ladder is now a maze. So I want you to picture the formula that most of us were taught in school. Work hard at school, graduate from university, climb the corporate ladder. Now, this was never the reality for many people. Some folks found success in trade schools. They found a different route, right? Others as entrepreneurs. Meanwhile, systemic racism, gender bias, injustice, those created barriers for millions of people who never had the true access to that formula. Still, this was the formula we were taught. But with changes in automation, machine learning, globalization, and AI, the latter is now a maze. Now, pundits have responded to this by saying, we need to prepare students for jobs that don't exist. But we've already seen how quickly this falls into the trap of futurism. Decades ago, a decade ago, it was all about teaching every student how to code. Now with ChatGPT, you can produce seemingly flawless code in seconds. I've watched people, you know, putting together a question that was not even fully formed, and then it puts out Python code, and it's amazing what it's coming up in terms of coding. I've been blown away with what that actually looks like on the programming side. And the truth is, we can't predict what the maze will look like. With vintage innovation, we avoid the extremes of that lock and block approach or that naive futurism approach, right? We avoid both traps. Here we mash up the old school and the new tech. We overlay the best practices and the next practices. We ask, what do students need in a world of AI? What does it mean to do human work in a tech-centric world? Vintage innovation is the process of taking old established ideas and concepts and updating them in new and innovative ways. This can involve reusing, repurposing, or adapting older technologies or designs in order to create something new and improved. Vintage innovation often draws on the past for inspiration and incorporates elements of nostalgia while also incorporating modern technology and design principles. An example would be blending together the older craft of origami with digital modeling and emerging research in math. By the way, the last five sentences I just shared, that was from ChatGPT, which is kind of wild to think that that chat did a pretty good job taking the idea of vintage innovation that I first brought up, I guess, in 2015, and then continued to write about for the next 4 or 5 years, and condensing it down into something that was pretty solid. All right, so what does this actually look like? What does it mean to take a vintage innovation approach with something like AI? Well, it really begins by treating ChatGPT as a tool. I know that sounds strange, but all new technology comes across as cheating in the beginning. I remember teachers telling me to disable spell check because it was cheating. When I was a kid, I had teachers who told me that word processing was making it too easy to modify text. They preferred typewriters instead, and they viewed computers as, well, cheating. I still meet teachers who say that starting out with Wikipedia is a bad idea. They view Wikipedia as cheating. In truth, I can see how creators might use ChatGPT as part of the writing process in a way that's not all that different from going to Wikipedia first. They'll take the initial 300 words and rework it and add to it, find their own ideas, and ultimately make it their own. In that sense, writing will be more like collage art, which in many respects it already is. Your single solitary voice is distinctly yours, and I get it, it is. But it's also part of a chorus shaped by what you read and what you listen to and who you talk to, and all of those elements of culture and climate and location. When you write, you never write alone. Yesterday, I had fun with AI. I asked the chatbot, the ChatGPT, to create a to-do list for a supervillain. And what I was doing is I basically took one of my most popular writing prompts and I turned it into something that I wanted to see if it could answer it, basically, right? And the answer I got was really boring. It was like, you know, develop a plan to take over the world, assemble a team of loyal henchmen. It was good, but it was boring. So I decided to change it up, and I asked it to be funny. And the results were, well, not that funny. It was like, take over the world, duh, steal the moon, create a death row, build a giant robot arm. I mean, it just was like, it was kind of funny, like, maybe would make you smile. Number 10 was like super dark. It actually said build a time machine and go back in time to kill baby Superman. Like, whoa, that was dark. So I looked at this and I said, well, what would it mean to use this as a starting place? So I took the answers here and I turned it into something different. So take over the world, I changed it to take over the world, but maybe start out small, perhaps an exoplanet. Or just take over Fresno. Yeah, start out small with Fresno and then go big. Again, not hilarious, not funny, but a little more creative. Steal the moon? That's a bit cliche though. So maybe find a better moon? I'm thinking Titan or Io. Instead of build a death ray, create a shrink ray, but one that only makes your clothes shrink so that everyone in Fresno thinks they've gained 10 pounds overnight. Instead of train an army of sharks, again, who cares, right? I changed it to train a army of moderately sized genetically engineered hamsters, which I thought was a little bit more creative, right? This one, come up with a ridiculous and over-the-top villainous name. I just changed it to come up with a ridiculous and over-the-top villainous name like Kyle. Again, I'm looking at all of this and it's not necessarily funnier, but it is more creative, and more importantly, it is more me. It has my voice, it has my choice, it has me, the very human element. In fact, I would argue that this exercise allowed me to be deeply human. I took something that was computer generated And the creative constraint of working within those 10 ideas pushed me to think divergently. That's where you're essentially thinking outside the box by repurposing the box. While I began with AI, I quickly moved into the human elements that focused on things like my quirky humor, my personal reference of where I grew up, which was Fresno. This is a small example of taking a vintage innovation approach. But beyond that, I think what we really need to do is ask, what do students need for the future? And the short answer is the best way to prepare students for the future is by empowering them in the present. So what does that look like? Well, it means something like this. Have students engage in project-based learning. Project-based learning is a teaching method that focuses on active experiential learning through the completion of real-world projects. If you couple this with design thinking, they also develop empathy. And when this happens, they develop those critical human skills that AI can never replace. Mike Cackley and Matinga Ragatz explore this idea in depth in the book Pulse of PBL. I interviewed them about this concept in a podcast that I did with them. You can go back and look at it. But it could be doing project-based learning. It could be having those Socratic seminars that you do. And in the process, they learn how to communicate verbally and hash out ideas in a deeply human way. It could be that they engage in game-based learning. It could be that they develop curiosity by doing inquiry-based learning. The reality is, we need to ask ourselves the question, what do students need to develop that AI cannot do for them? And based on that, we need to rethink what it means to learn. And the beauty of it is, these models already exist. Inquiry-based learning, design thinking, project-based learning, Socratic seminars, game-based learning, those already exist. And teachers are already leading the charge in those innovative practices. So am I scared that ChatGPT and AI will, you know, disrupt education? I'm a little unnerved, yeah. But I'm hopeful, deeply hopeful, because I trust teachers to innovate. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? And then also, I just want to say I am on social media. So if you go to Instagram, you look at Spencer Education, you can find my stuff there. I also have a Facebook page that's also Spencer Education. So connect with me there. SpencerVideos.com is where you can find my YouTube channel. Please connect with me. That would be awesome. I would love to continue our conversations. Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.